A challenge accepted. A convent in Scotland, 1912. At recreation one day, some of the sisters were discussing certain small favors received which they attributed to the intercession of the Little Flower of Jesus. One or two were rather enthusiastic as to her influence with the Sacred Heart. The others listened passively, but as the same subject of discourse was kept up for a few recreations, they seemed bored at the praises given to Thérèse. The superioress sided with the majority, and, to stop the discussion, said, "Well, do you, who have such confidence, ask her to send us a large ciborium? The two small ones we have are quite insufficient for a large number of daily communicants. Then we shall see whether she is a saint or not." So it was agreed that the clients of the Little Flower, sisters and children, should make a novena of communions for that intention. The novena finished, but no ciborium appeared, and great was the triumph of the opposition party. Some did not hesitate to say, "You see, she is not a saint." Good enough, of course, but somewhat too self-conscious. After all, what extraordinary things did she do for God? Her supporters still maintained that she was a saint, and felt convinced Thérèse would send a large ciborium for the children, as they were now all daily communicants. They immediately began another novena with increased earnestness, asking her to obtain from the Sacred Heart a speedy answer. During the second novena, our collecting sisters were staying for a few days at the house of a pious gentleman who usually gave them hospitality. One evening, while conversing in presence of their host, the Holy Father's decree on daily communion was discussed. The sisters spoke of the large number of our children who were daily communicants. Though they had no idea we were making a novena for our ciborium, they mentioned that our ciboriums were small. They spoke also of our anxiety when watching our poor old priest trying to ascend the altar steps. This he had to do more frequently now, on account of the increased numbers for Holy Communion. Strange to say, their story received but scant sympathy, and the matter seemingly dropped. But next morning, when the sisters came downstairs, our gracious benefactor was standing at the foot with a ciborium in his hand. "Oh, what a beauty!" they exclaimed. "That's for you," he replied. "You may write and tell your superior about it, but ask her to kindly return me the small one which I gave her." Their surprise and pleasure may be imagined, and great was the children's delight on hearing the news. They continued their prayers and made a novena of thanksgiving. But as our benefactor had procured a different ciborium to that shown to the sisters, some little delay was caused. However, their desire of seeing Thérèse's gift was fulfilled on the 1st of December, when the superioress brought into the classroom a handsome silver gilt ciborium. They clapped their hands, and then knelt down to thank the Sacred Heart and his little white flower for having heard their prayers. The opposition party still refused to own themselves beaten. "You don't call this an answer to prayer," they said. "If the little flower cannot give without making an exchange, she is not much of a saint." The objection was presently overcome in quite a startling way. After a letter of thanks to the pious donor, there came an immediate reply to the effect that he had ordered a second large ciborium. This arrived on December 11th and proved to be of silver, beautifully chased. Our other small ciborium had to be returned to the mother house, and today we have two large and lovely ones, thanks to Sister Thérèse. Needless to say, all our sisters are now only too willing to acknowledge the great influence she must possess with the Sacred Heart. She has the unbounded love of the children, and as a token of gratitude, they daily say aloud the prayer for her beatification. The Little Flower and the Altar. A Convent of Mercy, Scotland, 1912. The opening of a branch house usually brings many wants, and among the articles required for our chapel were altar candlesticks. I petitioned the Little Flower to provide them for us, and after a few days I said to the sisters that it showed a want of confidence not to order them. I did so, and on that very day I received a banknote from a former pupil in America, the exact sum required. Larger candlesticks have since been given, the gift of another unlooked-for donor. I was told that until we obtained a monstrance, benediction could not be given. Placing this difficulty in the hands of Sister Therese, I begged her to use her influence on our behalf. In a few days, the question came from an unexpected quarter. What was most required? I mentioned the monstrance. It was ordered forthwith, and it is a beautiful one of solid silver gilt, thanks to dear Sister Therese. I can say with truth that not a week does not pass without some favor being granted through her intercession, and as a rule I receive more than I dare ask. I am only too pleased to do her honor, and I sincerely hope the day is not far distant where we shall hear of her beatification. The Little Flower and the Weather. The Carmel Auberges Les Saintes, Belgium, June 17, 1912. Our community possesses the treasure of holy poverty, and we are obliged, in order to live, to help ourselves by the work of our hands. A considerable portion of our enclosure consists of meadowland. Every year we make hay on it, which is sold for the benefit of the community. While the hay was being cut this year, the weather was bad, and it remained in torrents. It was still raining when the time came for us to stack it, and one of our youngest sisters said to me, "Mother, will you give me leave to put a picture of Sister Therese in the field, and beg her to give us some sun at once?" "Very well," I replied, and I promised the dear little sister that at the first ray of sunshine we will begin the novena for her beatification, and we will also announce the favor to our nuns at Lisieux. The picture was carried to the meadow before Mass. During the holy sacrifice, the clouds dispersed, and cheering rays of sun began to appear. But the wind still remained in the west. Then the sister, who had put the picture in the field, said to our little saint, "If it is you who are giving us this fine weather, make the wind change." Immediately the weathercock turned to the north, and for 5 days we had magnificent weather in which to finish our hard work. When all the hay was stacked, we took away the picture, and the rain began once more. An Escape from Death, United States. On September 2, 1908, I was in New York with our Reverend Mother, and when returning to the station, we had to cross a very crowded thoroughfare. Imagining somehow that our mother had already crossed, I followed, but it turned out that, seeing an electric car approach, she had held back. It was too late to warn me. I received the full blow and was, of course, thrown down. As soon as the conductor could stop the car, a crowd collected, expecting to see me crushed. But I regained my feet absolutely unhurt, without even a scratch or bruise, as testified afterwards by the convent doctor. My spectacles were not even broken, nor did I feel in any way dazed. The crowd grew larger every minute, and newspaper reporters pressed round to ask my name. To this our mother answered, "She is an exile nun from France. God hath wrought a miracle in her favor." They looked bewildered, and could not scarcely believe that I was not injured. The conductor said that the measure of my body might have been taken, so accurately had I fallen between the wheels. These street cars are much larger and heavier than ours, and have underneath an apparatus of chains which, in the ordinary course, would be bound at least to cause injury. I had been saved by Sister Therese. I felt it at the time of the accident. In my pocket I carried one of her little photographs, from which I have never since parted. For a few moments after the accident, it seemed to me as though I were in another world, so strong was the sense of the supernatural. An accident averted. Darkley, near Dublin, Ireland, December 31st, 1911. An old man, aged 72, has for a long while had a special devotion to the little flower. He can neither read nor write, but his wife read him the life of Sister Therese, and he has always a picture of her with him. One morning, at the time when he ought to have set out for work, his wife noticed that he was not getting ready, and seeing him look somewhat strange, she asked him what had happened. "I saw the little flower," he replied. "I don't know if I were awake or asleep, but I saw her distinctly, and she said to me, 'Do not go to work in that quarry.'" His wife would not believe him, but with tears in his eyes he repeated, "I saw her. She was beautiful and looked just like her picture. He did not go to work. It happened that on that same day, another man working in the same quarry met with a serious accident, of which our friend might have been a victim had not he been warned by Sister Therese. The stone fell on the spot where he usually worked. The good old man has again seen his heavenly benefactress. At this time she was accompanied by a lay sister of a certain convent, for the repose of whose soul he had prayed fervently. He understood that she meant him to know that his prayers were granted, and that this soul was in heaven.